Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Bluehost. Tremendous web hosting at an unbelievable price. In fact, between May 27th and May 31st, if you go over to jimharold.com/Bluehost, you can enjoy hosting for only $2.95 per month for 12 months.
Wow.
Just wow. You want to start your blog, talk about your passion, check out Bluehost. jimharold.com/Bluehost. Thanks, Bluehost.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the campfire. I am Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. And exciting times here around the Spooky Studio. Podcasting is growing by leaps and bounds, and we have some fantastic scary stories for you tonight. Now, I do want to share a couple of things. Since I've last spoken about where the podcast is, you can always get it at jimharold.com and, of course, iTunes, which I think the folks over at Apple have done more for podcasting than anybody. But I did want to mention we are now also available on Google Play Music for the Android platform, and we are also available on Spotify. The Campfire is available in all of those places I just mentioned and more, but those are two big additions, Google Play Music and Spotify. You can listen to the Campfire at your convenience in those places. And that is very cool. And we're very thankful for both of those organizations for saying, hey, yes, we want the Campfire. And you want the Campfire. That's why you've tuned in. And boy, we have some really good stories this week. So I'm not going to talk anymore. Here they are, the Campfire stories. Keith from Alabama is on the line. He's been listening for 4 or 5 years. And we're so appreciative of that. He has a really unique story. I'm not even going to set it up because I might spoil it. I love it, though. Keith, welcome to the program. Thanks for being a longtime listener, first-time storyteller, and tell us this very cool story.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. It happened about 8 or 9 years ago. I worked day shift at a local hospital, and my wife worked day shift at a convenience store in the town we lived in. She got up about 4 a.m. to go to work. I got up with her. I wasn't feeling well. Decided I was going to call in sick, stay home. Got her off to work, went to the bedroom, and set an alarm for what I thought was 7 a.m. Turned out to be 7 p.m. And I went back to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So I fall asleep the minute my head hits the pillow. And you know, a short time later, I feel something bump the bed. And like somebody walks up to the bed and pushes down on it real hard.
Right.
And I hear this voice telling me to get up. Just as plain as I'm talking to you, it says, get up. You're going to be late.
Uh-huh.
And I pop one eye open, and there's a little boy standing next to the bed. I'm like, okay, I'm thinking we had a son at the time that was 3 years old, and I'm thinking it's him.
Right.
And I wear glasses. I reach over to get my glasses off the nightstand, and when I put them on, there's nobody there.
Oh.
I get up, and I'm, you know, thinking I must have dreamed it. You know, I'm sick. I'm not feeling well. I must have dreamed it. Go into the living room, get the phone, call into work. And a little while later, I go down to my mother-in-law's house. And the way the house was set up, we lived in an apartment upstairs. She lived in the main house down a set of stairs around a corner.
Right.
And I walk down there. She's sitting there having her morning coffee. And I come in, make myself a cup of coffee, and sit down with her. And I start to tell her what had happened. And she just starts laughing. And I said, what's so funny about it? And she tells me, you met Ron. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, okay, what's going on here? And I look at her and I said, who's Ron? And she proceeds to tell me a story that Ron was a boy that lived in her mother's house before her mother moved into it. And as a child, this is the official story, was Ron got into some rat poison and fell down the stairs.
Oh my.
And they found him dead at the bottom of the stairs.
How sad.
And she had, my mother-in-law was really big into the Ouija board.
Mm-hmm.
And they took a Ouija board over to her mother's house and pretty much got Ron to hop on the board and took him to her house where he proceeded to stay. And it, you know, I had many experiences with him while we were there. We lived there probably about 4 years, and none of them were scary. It was as if he was looking out for us. He was a friendly ghost. But, you know, to this day, I still believe he saved my job, because I wouldn't have woken up.
Well, that's pretty neat. That's we might have had a story, something. I don't know. I don't remember ever being awoken by a ghost to make sure you're not late for your job. But that is a really, really cool story. And that's the thing I love about doing this show. You've been listening for most of the time I've been doing it. We're up to, you know, I think I let the anniversary pass and didn't even mention it. We're up to 7 years now, because it's 2016.
Right.
We started in 2009. But it doesn't matter how long I do this show, there's always a unique story out there, and you're proof positive of it. Keith, thank you for joining us tonight on The Campfire.
Thank you.
Next up on The Campfire is Jolene from California. Now, her husband actually found the podcast for her, knows that she likes to listen to scary stories, wants something to kind of, you know, kind of relax with and maybe fall asleep to, which some people, it keeps them awake, but apparently Jolene, it soothes her and puts her to sleep. We're so grateful for that and for her husband. But, you know, I love when people come on and talk about haunted places and spaces they've been to. And there's really no place, at least has the reputation of being more haunted than the Queen Mary. And Jolene has been there, and she's going to tell us about her experience. Jolene, welcome to the program. Thank you so much. And please tell us what happened on the Queen Mary.
Thank you, Jim, for having me. Yes, my husband and I and a couple that we travel with went to the Queen Mary, and we spent the night there. And you're looking at the brochures, and it talks about it being haunted. So when we checked into our room, you can actually ask for a list of the sightings and the Queen Mary. And we got the list, and we're looking at them, and our room is not on the list. So some of us thought that was good. Some of us thought that was unfortunate, but we kind of laughed about it. And we had signed up for a ghost tour that night, and we were actually traveling with a couple who do paranormal exploration, although we didn't know it at the time.
Right.
Anyhow, so we are in the Queen Mary, and we go out to dinner. We come back, and my husband is taking my picture on his iPhone as I'm walking down to our room, because we're on the aft part of the Queen Mary. So it's this really long, very long corridor, and he thought, well, this is a really cool picture because you have all of these staterooms, and as I'm walking down there, I'm passing all these staterooms. So he takes four pictures. The first one, I'm walking. The second one, I'm walking. The third one, I'm walking. The fourth one, I get to our room, and I get in. And we get into the room, and we're unpacking, and he comes in, and he says, Did you see anybody in the hall when you were walking? And I said, no. And he says, are you sure? And he's kind of a teaser, right? So I'm irritated. It's like, I already said no. I didn't see anybody in the hall. And so he shows me his iPhone, and his hand's trembling. And his hand's trembling, I just kind of, my blood ran cold, because his hand don't tremble like that. And he says, look at this picture. And I'm looking at a picture, and here is this person in the third of the four pictures. Here's this person, and he's in this full bellhop outfit.
Oh, my.
And his hands are kind of cupped together, and he's tilting his head. He's looking at me like he's helping me find my room. And he said, did you see this guy? And it's just like, oh my gosh, no. And so we called our friends and we said, hey, we have this picture. It's just weird. Come over. They came over and we reenacted it. You know, because you can count based on like the way that my husband had taken the photos, we could reenact where I was, where this dean or whatever this man was.
Right.
And he was close. I mean, he was really close to me in this picture. And it was just so creepy. So the next day, we take the picture to the front desk and we say, are there any bellhops that dress like this now? And they're like, no, we don't have anybody that's dressed like that. And we went back to the hall and we tried to find like a room where someone could have popped out, you
right.
know. There was no doors where he was, where he could have just appeared, you know, from some room. And so we just chalked it up as just creepy. But then the next morning, I there's this coffee table book on the Queen Mary, and I open it up and I'm just reading it, and there's this picture from the 1900s of bellhops.
I knew it.
And oh my gosh. And they're dressed like this guy. So I bring my husband in, he turns on the picture and he, you know, expands it of this ghost. Now that we know, and we're comparing it to these pictures, and it's the same hat, it's the white gloves, it's the outfit that is in our picture.
Oh
and
my.
So it is just so amazing. We never saw it, you know, ourselves with our own eyes, but the iPhone captured it. My husband's doing research, and he has found out later that apparently the iPhone is able to capture images that other cameras aren't necessarily able to, so we don't know about that. But it was just really creepy that entity was so close to me, and we just did not see it. Only the camera did.
Now here is the question: would you go back?
Oh heck yeah! Yeah.
That's the spirit. No pun intended. Well, Jolene, I love that. I love that. I love that the fact that it's so funny. I was just watching something on the Smithsonian, non-paranormal related, and they actually found one of Lou Gehrig's old bats that they actually played ball with. And they were able to take the photographs and compare. I love the fact that you were able to get your validation through a photograph that had been taken many, many, many years ago. That is so cool. And I thank you so much for sharing your story tonight on The Campfire.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jim.
This podcast is brought to you by Bluehost. Tremendous web hosting at an unbelievably low price. Let me tell you, folks, a lot of people say, Jim, you know, I really admire what you've done here. You know, you've created this media platform and so forth, but it started very, very simply. And if somebody's starting out today, you know, I think a podcast is a great thing, but maybe you want to start off first with a blog, right? It's a little simpler, a little less complicated. Well, the thing is that to me, one of the most important things when you decide to start a website or a blog is to have a web host you can trust. Someone that's been doing this for a long time. Someone who has great support. Someone that has a great price. Now, I know a lot of people say, well, Jim, I could go get a website for free. Well, I think in life I have learned you get what you pay for in terms of free. Many times free equates to, well, I can decide to just stop that service. You know, you depend on a free service for something like this. And, you know, 6 months in, they say, oh, we're going to stop the service. Or they decide they're just going to put random ads on your website, ads that you would never personally approve of sharing with your audience. So to me, it makes sense. The smart thing to do is find an economical host that you can trust and who has great support. And I've got the folks for you. Those are the folks over at Bluehost. And in fact, depending on when you're listening on this, now they always have fantastic deals. But from May 27th through Tuesday, May 31st, in celebration of Memorial Day, you can get hosting for only $2.95 a month for 12 months. $2.95 a month. That's less than the price of a fancy coffee. And if you're serious about whatever your passion could be, it could be sports, it could be politics, it could be knitting, it could be fashion, it could be the paranormal. But still, $2.95 a month, you're not going to beat that. So what I recommend you do is you go over to jimherold.com/Bluehost. That's jimherold.com/Bluehost. Click on the link there and go see what they have got to offer, because I think you're going to be really impressed. They've been around a long time. They're one of the biggest names in the industry. In fact, they power over 2 million websites worldwide. They have 24/7 support, which I think is so important, because when you first start this stuff out, I mean, now I feel I have a certain level of competency, but I still need support. But these guys give you 24/7 support right off the bat. And again, if you sign up and during this sale period between the 27th and the 31st, $2.95 a month. But still, they're there to help you every step of the way. Go over to jimherold.com/Bluehost. That's jimherold.com/Bluehost. Thanks, Bluehost. Next up on the line is Samir from New York. Now, he's been listening for a little under a year. He says he tunes us in maybe when he has a work break or something, kind of gets in a few stories, and he's decided to share some of his own, specifically stories about his grandmother who has passed and with whom he was very close. These are some of my favorite stories. Samir, thank you for joining us, and tell us what happened.
Thanks, Jim. Sure. So my story starts off... when I was young, my mother and father split when I was really young. So I moved in with my grandmother and my mother. And my mother, when I was 3 years old, my mom had to work full-time job and go to school as well. So I spent a lot of time with my grandmother, and I got really close with her. She used to tell me stories, and she took care of me. She was basically a second mother me, and with that I learned a lot from her. I learned our native language, and I basically lived with her. She was a really, really a person I spent a lot of time with, I was really close with. And that being said, I was listening to one of your podcasts not too long ago when I was at work. I believe it was podcast 253, and one of the gentlemen who were sharing their story, he asked if anybody had any stories that happened within a house that was a newer house.
Right. Travis, I think. Yeah.
I believe it was Travis. And my story, actually, when he actually asked, it clicked, and I was like, oh, hey, I have a story to share. And basically, my story starts off with me and my grandmother were really close, and she used to take care of me. And my mother, she was a nurse at the time. And my grandmother, she fell ill, and she used to take care of me. She fell ill, and one day when I was a little kid, probably around like 9 to 10 years old, my grandmother fell in the bathroom and broke her leg. And from then on out, she went to the hospital. And as a child, my mom was a nurse, and my grandma was actually staying at the hospital where my mom was working, along with a few of my other aunts as well, who are also nurses. And that being said, my mom, she's like take care of her. She's take care of my grandma when she was there. She'd go and visit her after her shift, and my other aunt. So they kind of worked it out. So there's always somebody with her. And that was really comforting for her, because she wasn't of the best of health. And while she's in the hospital, one thing led to another. She got sicker and sicker. It went from a broken leg to she caught like pneumonia, and just it didn't get any better. And everybody would go and visit her. My cousins would go and visit her. And one day, actually, when I was very young, when I was younger, I went to one of my cousin's house because my school was canceled for the day. It was raining really bad in Virginia, where we were living at the time. And my older cousin came and picked me and my little cousin up. My older cousin's name's Imam, and he picked myself and my younger cousin Abraham up. And he was like, hey guys, I know you guys aren't at school today. Why don't you come over and hang out? Like, I'm off also. So we were like, us being little kids and just dying to hang out with anybody older who was like, cool and had a car, we were like, okay, sure, why not? So he came and picked us up from our house, from my house, and Abraham was at my house as well. And we went to my cousin Imam's house, and right when we walked into his door, like into his house, he asked, he was like, hey guys, have you seen grandma lately? And my younger cousin Abraham, he was really good about checking up on her. He's really outgoing like that.
Right.
So he said, yeah. And Imam asked me, and I looked at him, and I was like, I haven't seen her since she went to the hospital. And at that point, it was probably, she was in the hospital for a little close to 2.5 months. And I told him, I was like, hey, you know, like, I haven't visited her in a long time. And he looked at me, and he was like, don't take your shoes off. He's like, put your shoes back on. We're going to go to the hospital and visit her. So I was like, okay, you know, like, I'm not going to say no to you. So, like, you know, might as well go with, like, one of your older cousins who are, like, who's cool. So we hopped in the car and drove back to the hospital. And it was raining really bad. And when we got to the hospital, he knew exactly where the room was because he visited her earlier in the week. Abraham knew exactly as well. So I followed him into the room. And Imam walked in first. And I walked in right behind Imam. And Abraham was behind, kind of like three little ducks. And Imam saw my grandmother and said hi. And as he said hi, he stepped to the side. And my grandma saw me. And I was like, hi, Grandma, how are you? And I went and gave her a kiss. And a kiss on the cheek. And when I gave her a kiss, she was like, don't do that because it hurts really bad. And I was like, oh, that's very strange because I saw the morphine right next to her. And I knew enough to be like, I know she's on pain medication. So that was really weird. So I was like, okay, I'm sorry. And my little cousin Abraham walked in after me and he was like, hi, Grandma. And he put his hand on her foot at the foot of her bed and he touched her foot like over the blanket. And she was like, don't do that. That hurts really bad. So Abraham moved his hand quickly and just took a step backwards. He was a little taken by that. So I started to talk to her and I was like, hi, you know, I'm sorry. I haven't come in a long time. I really hate hospitals. They just give me the creeps. And she was talking and she didn't make much sense of what she was saying. And I really couldn't make it out, but she was saying words, but I just really didn't understand. But then she kind of turned her head to the window and she had a window view of kind of like a little courtyard where it was raining really bad. And she looked out the window and she was like, it's really beautiful outside. So when she told me that, I kind of was just like, I looked at Imam and I was just like, that doesn't make any sense. It's raining really bad outside. I don't know what she's talking about.
Right.
And I took a step back and I looked at Abraham and Abraham took a few steps backwards and just ran straight into the bathroom. And I went in after him and I was like, hey, what's the matter? You know, like, well, why are you in here? Why are you like, you know, like, why are you crying? And he was like, she's going to die today. She's not good. She's going to pass away. And Abraham is 5 years younger than me. So he's either 6 years old, 5 years old, maybe even 4 years old, but within that range. And I was like, it's okay. I gave him like, you know, like a hug and put my arm around his shoulders and I tried to console him. I was like, hey, you know, he's going to be okay. And I left him in the bathroom. I came out and I kind of nudged on Imam's shoulder and I was like, hey, Imam, I think we should, you know, kind of head out because Abraham's not doing too well. And he was like, yeah, let's go. So we all said bye to Grandma and like kind of like avoided touching her because we didn't want to hurt her. And we just said bye and stepped out. And the car ride home, it was really quiet. We didn't have much to talk about and it was still raining really bad. And right when we got to Imam's house, we heard the phone ringing. And this was before cell phones and in the time of answering machines. And Imam opened the door and ran and grabbed the phone. And we're in his garage walking into his house. And Imam stops us and he's like, hey, guys, we need to go back to the hospital. And when he said that, I knew exactly what happened. So all three of us hopped back in the car again and drove back to the hospital. And by the time we got back to the hospital, I saw my mom and my aunts and everybody was there. And it kind of seems like we're like the last ones to get there. And they had told us that she passed away. And I went in and my aunt asked me, she was like, do you want to see her one last time? And I was like, yeah, definitely. Like, you know, I was really close to her and I felt like I wasn't a great grandson by not visiting her as much as I should have. So I definitely was like, I want to see her one last time at least. So I went in and I saw her in this one room that was like fairly big. It had a huge curtain around it and my whole family's in there just crying their eyes out. And basically, you know, like we went through the whole process. We buried her shortly afterwards and went through all the steps. And a week or so passed, or a week or two passed, and I was at home, and my mom was working night shift at the hospital again. And I told my mom and my aunt, who was staying with us also, that I was afraid to sleep alone. So I was like, I sleep in my aunt's room. So I'd sleep on like this little mattress in my aunt's room. And not even 2 weeks afterwards, I had a dream that I saw my grandma. Uh-huh. And it was a very vivid dream. I walked up to the house. And right when you walk into the house that my grandma had, there was a huge dining room to the right, and there was a huge table there. And it was an event similar to Thanksgiving, where everybody was at the house, and everybody, all my aunts, all my uncles, my little cousins were running around. The dining table had food on it, and a lot of food. So it was kind of like Thanksgiving. And when I walked in, I saw her at the head of the table. And when I walked in my dream, instead of going straight to her and talking to her, I started to the person to her right, being one of my uncles. And I went up to him and I was like, hi, good to see you. Gave him a hug and worked my way around the table and said hi to everybody and left my grandma for last. And when I came up to my grandma, I gave her a huge kiss on her cheek, and we made eye contact, and it was so vivid. And she looked 100% healthy. Like, she never went to the hospital. And I was just like, hi, how are you? And she's like, I'm good. And then I asked her, I'm like, what are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here. And when I said that, she had she turned her head a little bit to the side, what do you mean? And she said, you're dead. You passed away. You're not supposed to be here. And right when I said that, she screamed in my dream. She screamed for what sounded like 10 seconds straight at the top of her lungs. And she stops. And the scream doesn't just slowly fade out. It's like a loud scream, and then it just stops immediately. And she looks at me and she's, I'm never going to die. I'm always going to be here.
Huh.
And when she told me that, it woke me up from my dream. And I basically sat up in my off on the mattress, and I looked over at my aunt, who was sleeping on the bed, and she was sound asleep. And it took some time, probably a few hours, before I fell back to sleep. But I'm back to sleep, and I passed out, and I remember that dream vividly. Now, fast forward a few years, and that same house, my grandma's house, it's still there. We still have the traditions where we get together for Thanksgiving there every year. We try not to break tradition, and we invite all my aunts and all my uncles and all their kids. And one of my uncles, he was staying at the house, and he lives there. And he sleeps in this one room that overlooks our patio. And when my grandma was healthy, she used to walk around on the patio for exercise. She wouldn't go outside into the streets, but she would always walk around the patio. We had a really big patio in the backyard. And she would stretch her legs out and just enjoy the really nice air and whatnot. There's a lot of trees because it was in the suburbs of Virginia.
Sure.
And my uncle, he's notorious for sleeping with the window open. He, no matter whether the air conditioning's on in the house, if he has a million fans on him, no matter what, he'll always have the window open in his room. He likes the fresh air. So one night he was sleeping, and he told me the story where he woke up because it was really, really cold. And it's strange for him to wake up in the middle of the night because he's cold, because he just loves the cold air. And he got up to close the window because the window that he had open was the one that faces the backyard. And he went over there, and this is a few years after my grandmother passed away. He's looking outside, and he sees my grandmother walking in the middle of the night wearing all white around the backyard. And he sees her, and he's so taken by it that it's the middle of the night. He doesn't want to close his eyes, or he doesn't want to blink, because he's like, this is crazy. He's kind of shocked. And he knows that the minute he blinks that, you know, like she's going to go away. Her spirit's not going to be there. So he's trying his hardest to keep his eyes open to the middle of the night. And he just blinks once. And the minute he blinks, he didn't see her again. She just disappeared.
So you think she was trying to get a sign to everybody? She was still around through the dream, through this vision and so forth?
I firmly believe it. My grandmother, she was an awesome, person. And she honestly, like, she loved this house. This house meant a lot to her. And, I think it meant a lot to her because all the memories that she had in there, like she saw her grandchildren, she saw her great grandchildren there. It meant a lot to her. And my grandmother didn't have the best of health. So, usually people would come to visit her opposed to her going to other people's homes to go visit them. So I know like the house is more of like her sanctuary. Like she definitely loves that house and she was really, really attached to it. And another crazy story, fast forward even further on, from me being 9 to 10 years old to me being 31 years old, I got married and, when we had a family event at the house and my mother-in-law ended up staying at the house overnight because it was a late family event and we have extra rooms there. And my aunt's like, hey, you know, you should stay here. We have extra rooms. And my mother-in-law's like, sure, why not? And my aunt, she's a really, really stingy person when it comes to the air conditioning and the heat. So in the summer, it gets really hot and in the winter, it gets really cold. And her, I guess like the way she looks at it, it's like, if it's really warm, don't wear that much clothes. If it's really hot or if it's really cold, throw on some sweatpants. You'll be all right. And, at night during the summer, it gets really warm and you'll get dehydrated. And sure enough, my mother-in-law, she was there over the summer and she was upstairs in one of the bedrooms and she got really thirsty. So in the middle of the night, she came downstairs to grab a glass of water, and she saw my grandmother sitting on a chair in our living room out of the corner of her eyes wearing all white again. And when she came down, she saw it out of the corner of her eye, and she made sure that she didn't make any eye contact with her because she was terrified. And she knows what my grandmother looks like because there's a picture of her on the mantle above the fireplace. So she literally came downstairs to grab a glass of water, grabbed the water, went back upstairs and woke my father-in-law up and was like, I'm not going to stay in this house after tonight again. We're going to go and stay at Sam's house because there's no way we're going to stay at this house. And sure enough, they didn't stay at the house any longer. And I'm very confident that her spirit's still in that house and still there and happy about it.
So you see this all as a positive thing, I see. I seem to think, correct?
I absolutely see it as a positive thing. My grandma, like she took care of me, and although it scares the bejesus out of me, I look at it as like it's all a good thing. Like she, every time like I've had a dream or anything, it's just it's never been negative. And anybody who's felt it outside of being scared of seeing something that they're not used to, they're perfectly fine with it.
Well, it is a very cool story, and I thank you, Samir, so much for sharing it with us tonight on The Campfire.
If you love true ghost stories, check out Jim's 4 campfire books at Amazon. Each has been a Kindle Supernatural bestseller, and they have hundreds of reviews with a 4.5 average rating. Did you know that you can get the Kindle ebook for less than the cost of a fancy coffee? Plus, the paperback is available for those of us who prefer the dead tree version. They also make great gifts, too. Find them all at Amazon or go to jimharoldbooks.com for direct links to each book. Now, back to the show.
Josh has been listening for a little over a year, and he is going to share with us a story that happened with his friends and some strange things he's experienced. He's calling us tonight from West Virginia. Josh, welcome to the program and tell us about these experiences, these strange experiences.
Well, thanks for having me on, Jim. I don't actually know exactly where to start because they sort of all intersect. But to start as early as I can, basically a little background about me. I'm a practitioner of witchcraft, so like this type of stuff isn't necessarily like super out of the norm, so to speak. And I've been at that for a while. But all these stories take place when I was working at a university. I worked in the housing department of a university, and in this job, I sort of randomly stumbled upon a couple of people who thought and did the same sort of stuff that I did. So every now and then we would get together and I would either read cards for them or we would just sort of talk about our experiences or what have you. And slowly but surely, the line sort of started to blur between that and our job. The first sort of incident that happened that sort of involved all of us, someone who was living in the residence hall where we worked, she sort of stopped me one day and she said, "Hey, do you know anything about the supernatural?" And I said, "Well, a little."
Right.
And so she ended up giving me this story about how, I say that as though I didn't believe her. At the time, I did.
Mm-hmm.
She gives me this story about how when she was younger, she sort of had this thing that followed her around. And my eyebrows didn't really raise until she mentioned the fact that it never really had a face. She said that it just sort of would stand around in the corner no matter where she was. And she grew up around, she lived in a haunted house. And so things that would go bump in the night, so to speak, wouldn't necessarily spook her. And this didn't necessarily spook her either. But she always felt like it was some sort of a protector thing, but she called him Mr. Shadows when she was little. I guess when you're in first grade, like, what else are you going to call this thing that hangs out in the corner? But she mentioned that when she was little, he, like, would defend her, so to speak, like if someone was, like, mistreating her or something.
Right.
So anyway, she said that it just went away one day. Well, the reason she sought me out was that she mentioned that it came back. When she came the first time, she said that in her room, she was lying back to go to sleep, and she looked up and there was a circle on her ceiling. And at first she thought, okay, like maybe one of my friends pulled a prank, whatever. But as she like rolled over and looked back up, there was a second circle starting, and the way that she described it was that it was sort of like fluorescent, and if you were to touch it, it would come off on your hand, but it wouldn't smudge, sort of like those glow-in-the-dark moons and stars and all that stuff that I had when I was a kid. But anyway, so then she mentions these little symbols that start to form as she like runs downstairs to go get her friends and come back up. And the thing was, even though you could tell they had tried to sort of scrub it off, it still would show up under a black light. And the part that got me, because obviously you're going to be a little suspicious when something like that happens, but the part that got me was that it would still show up under a black light, and it was like a perfect circle all around her room. And like there was no way that she could have done that. So we're all sort of like, okay, well, this is kind of weird. Whatever. But a coworker of mine was standing beside me, and she, listen, I've seen her get spooked at a lot of stuff. I've never seen her actually get up and run out of a room. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to ask her about that later as I deal with this right now. So later on, I'm like, hey, listen, what was all of that? Well, she ends up mentioning that she had something pop up in the room that she hadn't seen since she was a little kid. So I'm thinking, well, these are some pretty connected stories, I guess. So anyway, we progress a little bit, and eventually she comes to me for a reading, and she says, I just kind of want to know what's going on with this thing. And so this isn't the first time that I've been asked to do a reading on something that, like, I guess wasn't human. But anyway, so I throw cards, and without sort of being dramatic, because I'm not trying to be like Whoopi Goldberg and ghost or anything like that, but I look at her, and like the cards were very, very clear that the purpose of this thing was to sort of separate her mm-hmm. from people.
Oh my.
Because she had just like gotten into a relationship and found a friend group and so I thought, this is really weird. So Q-Lin, the friend, I don't know. I'm not going to call us a coven because we're not, I don't know. Q-Lin, my like-minded friend, that's what I'll call them. I go to one of them because her sort of skill set was that she just sort of saw ghosts like it was her job.
Right.
Not that anybody ever knew that about her, but she did. So I went to her and I said, can you help me out with this? Because I can't see it. I don't know anything about it. Anyway, so she looks up and she spots the girl in the crowd and she says, honestly, I don't get anything. Which was weird because if anybody was going to pick up on it, it was going to be her. But so as we fast forward a little bit, a friend of mine was going to meet me downstairs. And as I look up, I see the girl who had Mr. Shadows and the stuff on her ceiling. She comes down the stairs and there was a mirror in the hallway. And I see her look into the mirror and she starts to like fix her glasses or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she turns around and she just stares into the stairwell for a little bit. And she didn't know I was there. She didn't know I was watching. But then I see her sort of like with a startled look on her face, turn around and start to leave. And so later I caught up to her and I said, hey, what was that? And this is sort of where the story devolves with her. Basically she told me that her reflection was doing stuff that she wasn't.
Ooh.
And normally, you know, I know that that sends off signals like, was she in a good mental state and all of this? And honestly, she was, I'm not a professional or anything, but she was coherent enough that her stories never changed and all of this. And so I hate to sort of like leave that with a cliffhanger, but after one or two other encounters with her and one encounter of her Mr. Shadow thing popping up in my room, I said, I'm done. Like, I've never before had like a knot in the pit of my stomach telling me like, don't let this person in. So that was kind of weird. But sort of tangentially related and also sort of the main story that I shared in the group, the friend of mine who I sort of worked with quite frequently, he eventually moved to another part of the city. And so one night I'm visiting him. And I actually had no idea that this part of the city used to be the Civil War battleground. Had no idea. So that was what it was. I was not even in that mindset.
Right.
So he and I are hanging out. And we're not really doing any sort of spirit work. We're just sort of starting to mention some things that had happened, like sort of recently. We hadn't seen each other in a while. And so we go outside because he has a horrible habit of smoking. So we go outside and I look up and he paused right when I did. So I was like, all right, we're on the same page. What I see is what I can only describe. I don't want to call it a horde because that makes it sound like it was zombies, but it wasn't. But it was a rather large group of what I'm assuming are ghosts. and to sort of paint the picture a little better, they all had sort of like these like ripped sort of clothes and overalls, and they would move. They would just sort of inch forward. But if you were to look away and look back, they would sort of like restart.
Ooh.
So they never really got very far. And honestly, I think if I hadn't looked away, I think they would have just restarted anyway. The reason that I mentioned these two seemingly unrelated stories together is because all of this happened within the course of 2 weeks. So I'm sort of like, I can't really separate one in my head from the other. But anyway, so I look at my buddy and I say, who are they? I'm assuming he's lived here for a while. Maybe he's gotten a feel for him. And he says, I have no idea. I saw him too. And so then he starts to sort of validate what I'm seeing. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to go back upstairs. And so we never really figured out what they were, but we just sort of accepted them as housemates, I guess. I don't know. Anytime I went to visit, they were there. But after that, I noticed that they all sort of like lined up around the perimeter of the property. Like, they never really gathered in a group again. And so I specifically mentioned, like, hey, did you do something? And he said, yeah. He sort of set up a perimeter or what have you. So I said, okay. And we never talked about them again until one night. Again, we always sort of had like late movie nights. It was summer.
Right.
What else were we going to do? And so we're sitting in his living room, and from his living room, you have a perfect sort of line of sight to the kitchen. And so I would look up and I noticed this thing sitting in his kitchen, and I'm trying to not like really draw attention to it or like spook him or anything. So throughout our conversation, I still just sort of like look up, make sure he's still there, see if I can sort of gauge what he might want. Keep in mind, this is sort of like the only time in my whole practice that I've ever actually like seen things.
Right.
This was definitely outside of my area of expertise. But eventually, before I leave, I look up and I say, before I go, we need to talk about this dude in your kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And he, the whole time we've been friends about 6 years. I've never seen him like tear up. I've never seen him really show any sort of like emotion at all. And as I'm describing this guy, I'm sort of seeing shock set in. To describe the guy, he was sitting with his knees to his chest, and he looked like if he were standing up, he'd be, I'm about 5'8", so he would probably be about like 6'1". But what startled me more than anything was how he was dressed. So unlike the sort of gaggle of ghosts that had been outside, this guy was sort of dressed all black. But what the sort of icing on the cake, as it were, was that it looked as though he were wearing an executioner hood, just sort of like a black hood with slits for the eyes.
Oh, my.
So I don't actually know. I'm not really a history buff. I have no idea if that was still like a thing around the Civil War or anything like that. I probably not. But anyway, so my friend at this point is looking at me like wide-eyed, and I can see his eyes glass over. And he says, I saw the same thing last night, but I never told you. And I mean, he just sort of, he said it back to me, but he also like included some details I didn't necessarily. So the thing is, with this guy, anywhere he'd ever lived and the whole time we've been friends, there was always some sort of activity. And it, strangely enough, always seemed to be in the kitchen. And one apartment he had, there was just, his kitchen was really active. I don't know. So anyway, we never really got to the bottom of that because he ended up moving. But neither one of us ever really saw him again in particular. And to sort of close that, because as much as all these started in about the same 3 weeks, they all sort of ended in the same 3 weeks. To close out the Mr. Shadow story, one day, like the night that it all sort of ended for me, she just, the girl that I referred to previously, she just sort of came to my room and she told me that like Mr. Shadows had finally spoken to her. And like, she was like, oh, I think he's protective. Well, okay. You can think that. there's a difference between protective and possessive. But anyway, so the last I heard of her, she was in Japan studying abroad. So I guess things worked out for her. I don't know if Mr. Shadows is still around. I remember having to explain all this to her boyfriend because he was like, can you tell me what's going on? So I don't know. It was a strange time to work at that university. I don't know. A couple other things have popped up here and there, but those are probably two of the most, two of the longest running.
Right. And the most dramatic, I would think.
Well, yeah, for the most part. I mean, some other things would pop up. We would, one time a friend of mine sort of like had this thing attached to her for a while, but we took care of it, so it was not quite as dramatic. I don't know. This all sounds like an odd plot for a TV show. It's not, I promise. It just
Well, let me ask you this. I think it was Nietzsche who said something about if you stare into the abyss, this is a paraphrase, but you stare into the abyss long enough, the abyss will stare back. Do you ever think about, for example, with witchcraft, do you ever think about stepping away from it because of these kind of things? Do you think that it makes more of them surround you and make themselves known to you? Or do you just think that one is not connected with the other? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think because even though I don't really see things in general, I honestly have only seen a couple of things since all of those stories occurred. I actually think that because I'm aware that those things exist and I've sort of always been aware of it, I think that's the reason I fell into witchcraft. I say fall in, like that's not something that I was sort of, I don't know, drawn to since I was a little kid, but mm-hmm. to sort of paint the full picture, I grew up in a Southern Baptist household.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a culture shock when I was like, whoa, you mean there are other people who do things like this? And like the whole spirit work thing, I don't know. Those two stories have been by far the most dramatic, like you said. So honestly, I do think that when you practice or when you sort of submerge yourself, honestly, even in stories like the ones we share on the campfire
sure.
earlier, I was listening to the paranormal podcast and you had, oh, I don't remember her name. She was a medium.
Carol Obley.
Yes. Yes. Carol. I wanted to say Karen, but yes, Carol. I think that you do sort of become a blip on the radar. But by and large, I've never had anything directly like pop up for me, so to speak. Like all of those happened around other people. And the whole time I've been living where I do for about 3 years now, I've only had one thing ever be in my apartment.
Well,
I think that's a good question.
Yeah, I do like to ask that. I even, to your point about my podcast, I wonder about that when I do, you know, am I somehow, but I've never had any bad experiences, but I wonder sometimes, ooh, you know, it's like, what am I doing here? But it is so fascinating and it's so interesting that I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And it's because people like you call in. And they tell their stories on the campfire. And Josh, I'd like to thank you for doing that tonight.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this edition of The Campfire as much as I did. I told you we had some good stories this week. And a special note, wherever you listen, whatever service you may use, please rate and review the podcasts and tell a friend. That really does help. A special note this week, of course, in the States, we're approaching Memorial Day weekend, and I want to say a big thank you to all of the military members, past and present, and special thoughts to those who have given the ultimate sacrifice, because without what they have done, we would not enjoy the liberties we have today. We wouldn't have picnics, we wouldn't have barbecues, and we certainly wouldn't have podcasts like this one. So we thank you so much, all of you who have served the country and given us our freedoms. Have a great Memorial Day. Stay safe. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.